Welcome once again to our program, Interpreting the Bible Throughout the Ages. We're in that section dealing with the quest for the historical Jesus, and we've been talking about Pope Pius X wrote an encyclical explaining how this was really contradicting the basic teachings of the Church, this quest for the historical Jesus, saying that the historical Jesus and the Christ of faith were really separate, two different persons. And so we just had this good presentation by Ron Eldred, our regular speaker on the program, who teaches at John Paul II Catholic High, apologetics, world history, U.S. history. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, pastor emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church here at the Crow's Nest in St. Patrick's Rectory, where the Shamrock meets the is on the streets between 19th and Poplar. Ron, welcome once again to our program. You just gave us, finishing up last time, about those some of the main points that Pius X had pointed out that were so erroneous in his encyclical Pascendi, and that was about the modernness of his time around 1907. Now we're up to talking about what is called neo-modernists, or the new modernists, and you were quoting the famous Father McCarthy, I believe. Would you continue on that for our present program today?
Yes, that was from an article that Father McCarthy wrote entitled Modernism Yesterday and Today. He only identified 10 or 12 of the actual 50 or 60 different criticisms of modernism, and keeping in my mind that modernism is something that, Catholic modernism is something that occurred back in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. As I said, he identified about 10 or 12 of Pius X, St. Pius X's encyclical Pascendi. And then after we went through those, then what we're going to do today is take a look and see how the neo-modernist, that is the modernist today, the theologians and scripture scholars, how they still have retained a lot of these modernist ideas. In fact, that's why they're called neo-modernist, the new modernist.
Okay. So what are some of the beliefs of the new modernists that contradict the teachings of the Church?
Well, the first one that Father McCarthy dealt with was belief in the ongoing reform of the Church. That's a modernist belief of the late 19th, early 20th centuries, but he claims still is today. He says that today's neo-modernists maintain that this papal criticism of modernists as ongoing reformers of the Church does not pertain to future popes or to ecumenical councils or to bishops acting in union with the popes, but is a warning to bishops not to let themselves be influenced by modernist ideas. What he's really saying is that, okay, Pius X said these things back in 1907, but he was speaking for a pope, meeting the circumstances of the today, then, and this encyclical that he had does not necessarily apply to subsequent popes or subsequent councils. This condemnation.
Of these specific
yes.
ideas. What are some of the specific ideas?
Well, he makes a comment that, nevertheless, private voices of dissent are legion in the Church today, and he's talking about today. He's talking about, the 1990s, in the first decade of the 20th century. Well, another belief is that faith is merely a feeling. And you might recall, we emphasized this very heavily over several sessions. It sort of begins with Immanuel Kant, a philosopher that we spent a couple of sessions on, that you can't know God or anything else outside the human mind. All you can know is what's in the mind. So obviously, if you're going to have any knowledge of God at all, it's going to have to be internal. It's going to have to be more emotional, feelings, intuition, and things of that sort.
No accepting of outside revelation.
That's correct. Because you can't know it. It's outside, you know, the human mind. You can't know with any certainty. And we know, we talked about how a number of Protestant theologians and scripture scholars picked up upon that in Germany and in France back in the 1830s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Through there, people like Schleiermacher, people like Strauss, Reichel, and quite a few others. And then we picked it up again at the end of the 19th century and the early 20th century with Catholic with Catholics like Renan and Loisy and Tyrell. And it was Loisy and Tyrell and Renan, it was their ideas that Pius X was condemning in Pestendi and other similar type. Mm-hmm.
But they were specifically the outstanding Catholic voices at
yes.
the time.
But a lot of these same views are still circulating around today.
Okay.
And this is what Father McCarthy, of course, has been bringing up today. And so this idea that faith is merely a feeling is an old feeling, is an old idea that goes back to Kant, and then from him through the Protestant theologians that we mentioned and scripture scholars, and then the Catholic modernists, right on down to Catholic neo-modernists today.
Okay. So this idea that there is feeling involved in faith,
sure.
but they want to reduce it. It's merely a feeling.
Merely a
feeling.
There's
nothing coming objectively from God's revelation.
Idea of revelation is something that comes through emotion, comes through feeling, and kind of a collective conscience or something like that, consciousness, which is, I've said on several occasions, is all kind of fuzzy.
All right.
As Father McCarthy says, we don't ordinarily today hear Catholic dissenters or neo-modernists saying that faith is merely a feeling, but he says many of them seem to be speaking from a background that does imply that faith is not based on objective reality. Another one he talks about, belief in the evolution of dogma. This was one of the original modernist views, and he maintains that the neo-moderns today have continued with that. He says that most educated Catholics today believe in biological evolution. This belief can easily grow into an implicit belief in the evolution of all things, including the dogmas of the Church. So dissenters to various teachings of the Church can be believers in the evolution of dogmas, even though they do not explicitly say so. The remedy for this danger, he says, is for those who believe in biological evolution to take an explicit stand against the idea of the evolution of dogmas of the Church and thus solidify their faith. And he says that he's implying that not very many of them do that.
Okay. So let's take an example about believing a certain divine reality.
Well, he says that a belief in the objective reality of the objects of faith is essential to Catholic faith. Objective, we mean that which is outside of our minds. That really exists. This includes belief in the objective existence of God. Not some just feeling that there's a God, but a rational intellectual knowledge that there is a God, that you can even prove, using, the kind of reasoning that St. Thomas Aquinas and others used to do that. Many Catholic biblical interpreters don't ever bring up the subject of reality at all, according to Father McCarthy, but thus leaving the road open to divine reality, which is not distinct from the subjective reality of the believer. He goes on to say that the existentialist reality of God, as expounded by Rudolf Bultmann, we're going to get to Bultmann here very quickly.
Okay.
And his followers is a modernist belief that those who reduce the objective reality of God to the status of a literary genre, as is done in form criticism, they're modernist. And, of course, the main technique used by biblical scholars today is this form criticism, which we're going to be getting into when we get into Bultmann. And he says, this brings us up to the teachings of those form critics who treat all divine intervention as just simply literary forms without undertaking to show that these divine interventions were historically real. In other words, that they really did happen.
Okay, now, of course, Rudolf Bultmann was not a Catholic.
No.
Okay, but a great, widely recognized scripture scholar.
Yeah, one of the most famous, and certainly in the 20th century. Another belief was the belief in truth, that life is truth. This is one of the things that Pius X had condemned as a modernist belief. And Father McCarthy says this is still something that's alive and well in Catholic neo-modernists, that the truths of the Catholic faith have come from objective reality and not from the subjective consciousness of believers. This is what, the Catholic Church has always said.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, few Catholic dissenters say explicitly that life is truth, but those who say that the traditional teachings of the Church must be conformed to the felt needs of believers are implicitly saying that life is truth.
Okay, now that's a little tricky, because how about, hasn't John Paul II made a particular effort to speak to the modern approach of experience? We're trying to say here is that we cannot reduce truth just to our personal experience, that there is something outside God, the Messiah, the sacraments revealed by God, and so we're not just going on from our personal experience of them. That doesn't make them real.
Yeah, the Church has always taught that there is a, in the following from Aristotle, and of course St. Thomas Aquinas' Christianization of Aristotle, that there is an objective reality that exists outside our minds, and that our whole bodies are designed in such a way so as to intercept this reality outside of ourselves through our senses. As Thomas said, all knowledge begins with sense experience. But then the human mind has its own capability. God created us with an intellect. And not just with senses, but with an intellect that we can take the sensory data that's coming in, and then we can process it using our intellect, and using not only that, but what we've stored in our memory, and combining it or developing it or expanding upon it or whatever, because that's our powers of reason.
So as we've talked about so often, we're back to what Pope Benedict XVI has been saying is the major heresy, wrong teaching of our time. We're in the age of relativism, that a thing is only true if I personally accept it as true, especially in the moral order of right and wrong. We're trying to get away from relativism here with keeping the Church's teaching that there are absolute revelations to us about good and bad, right and wrong, the existence of God. These are not just things we make up from inside.
Yeah, that there is a truth, an objective truth that exists outside of our minds, and that truth is not something that's relative to time and place and circumstance and situation, context, consequence, and all that kind of stuff. Another one, a very important one, another belief that the modernists held and still do, that God is immanent, that he's only internal in man. And Father says that to say that an act of God can exist only in so much as it is identified with myself, this is what Rudolf Bultmann said, it's a modernist idea. It is necessary for Catholics to resist the temptation to think that God does not act or exist outside of themselves, which is only a temptation to pride. Also, another important thing then with the modernist and neo-modernist today, and that's the laws of evolution. That those who believe in the evolution of biological species as an ever-ascending direction, that is, it's a Charles Darwin's idea, often extend this idea to a belief in certain laws of evolution which control all manifestations of life, including the life of the Church. And everything about the Church, not only its divine revelation, but its liturgy, its doctrines, everything. There are no such laws of evolution controlling human life and activity, according to Father McCarthy, but some Catholics have a vague idea that there are such laws. A belief in historical criticism, and we're talking about, this method that scripture scholars use, laboring under the illusion that it's a highly scientific, objective, exact science. Okay. And we're going to come back and look at that later, so I don't want to evaluate that right now. But it is interesting that Pope St. Pius X tied the method of historical criticism to the heresy of modernism. Catholic historical critics today claim that the modernist prejudices behind historical criticism at the time of Pope Pius X, that they have been purged from the system, they do not tend to show in clearly how this is so in their use of the method of historical criticism. What they're really saying there is that, maybe a lot of the German Lutheran scripture scholars of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, the 1830s and 40s and 50s, had these preconceptions. They had these prejudices against the possibility of miracles or fulfilled prophecies, things like that. But according to present-day modern scripture scholars, they say, well, we've eliminated all those. All those preconceptions have been eliminated, and now all we have is...
strained out.
They all strained out. Now all we have is the pure science, the pure objective science. So anything that we come up with in our scripture scholarship and our theological speculation, whatever, is getting pretty close to certitude. It's getting pretty close to the truth. It's something you can take to the bank, so to speak. It's so sound and what have you. Well, we know that's not true, and we're going to find out as we go on in the next few sessions why that isn't true. But according to Father McCarthy, students of historical criticism tend to draw modernist conclusions from what they hear, no matter what they might say. But the neo-patristic approach to sacred scripture does actively purge modernist presuppositions from the method of historical criticism. And he says that this is one of the reasons why neo-patristic exegesis needs to replace historical criticism as a method of interpreting sacred scripture in the Catholic Church. And this neo-patristic scripture criticism, what Father McCarthy and Brian Harrison and a lot of other scripture scholars, good scripture scholars, are trying to do, is to eliminate the preconceptions, the prefigurations, the presuppositions that you find in a lot of the scripture scholarship, that in other words, there's no such thing as miracles or no such thing as fulfilled prophecies, and so anything in the Bible that has any kind of supernatural explanation to it, it has to be purged, it has to be cleansed out. Father is saying is we need to get rid of all those kind of presuppositions. That the method in itself is usable.
Historical criticism.
Yes, historical criticism. The set of steps that's used, the techniques that are used, is usable. It's not necessarily innately, wrong.
Flawed.
But also, he strongly urges in this neo-patristic, and this is where the word comes from, the new patristic, it's going back to the Church Fathers and what they had to say about the Bible. People like St. Jerome, people like St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, and really maybe 100 others. So that's what he means by a neo-patristic scholarship, is again, eliminating the preconceptions from the use of the method, the historical critical method, and at the same time, going back and looking and see what the Church Fathers had to say and take that into account. In interpreting the Bible today.
And especially those who were closest to the time of the apostles, Justin Martyr,
yes.
Irenaeus, and those other people who...
Ignatius of Antioch.
Some of whom even knew the apostles.
Sure, sure.
Okay, well, and let's continue. So you have a few other points there about neo-modernism or new for our listeners. Neo just means new. The new modernism that still permeates a lot of our scriptural atmosphere today.
This next one is a very important one, too. It's belief in the evolution of the Bible. And as Father McCarthy says, The question is not whether there was a development of the oral tradition upon which the sacred writers based much of their writing, but rather whether the things stated as historical facts in the Bible evolved over time in the imagination of the early Christian communities. Remember, we really came across that type of thing when we talked about the modernists, according to them, the Bible wasn't written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The Bible was really written by later Christians toward the end of the first century, maybe even the beginning of the second century, who were not eyewitness to these events. And enough time had been allowed for myths and legends and that kind of thing to develop. And so
hopes turned into facts.
Yes. And we're going to get more specifically into this kind of thing when we look at Bultmann, so I don't want to get into it too much right now, because Bultmann was a kind of a neo-modernist himself. Modernists outside of the church plainly say that none of the supernatural episodes really happened. He asks a question. Do Catholic writers who touch on these episodes clearly refute this modernist reading, or do they implicitly accept this modernist reading?
So if a person starts with the idea that a miracle, Jesus could not have turned water into wine, factually, at the wedding feast of Cana, if a miracle isn't possible, then I have to explain it in another way.
You have to explain it in naturalistic terms. It was just a natural thing, a natural event, that Jesus didn't really walk on water. He simply was walking on stones, or he was walking along the along the shore, or some of that kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm.
Didn't multiply loaves and fishes to 5,000 people, but he merely actually encouraged them to share what they had. So, as you said so nicely, a natural explanation, because a miracle isn't possible.
Or the other possibility is a mythological explanation like Strauss developed. In other words, Strauss rejected the idea of naturalistic explanations, or, of course, the traditional explanations that it really did happen, and he came up with this idea that as time went on, because the Gospels were written, according to him, really mostly in the early second century, and so that allowed all the eyewitnesses were dead, and the people who actually wrote it to really sort of developed a mythology of all of this to suit their own purposes, their own needs. He didn't believe they were necessarily lying. That he thought they really probably believed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something they developed to satisfy their own needs for immortality, I guess, and salvation, I guess, as much as anything else.
So, but the basic idea was that miracles are not possible as they seem to be described in the scriptures, so we have to explain them a different way.
Yeah, people in the modern world who know about science and technology, according to these scholars, people won't believe it. Now, I don't think that's true, but now going on here, another is the rejection of scholastic philosophy and the teaching of the church fathers. This was another thing that Pius X had, which Father McCarthy believes is still alive and well among the neo-modernists today. The teaching of the scholastic philosophy and of the writings of the church fathers has been in great decline in Catholic academic faculty since the Second Vatican Council. That's a fact. And why has this decline taken place, Father asked? Does the substitution of neo-scholastic philosophical systems and of new approaches to the reading of the Bible prepare students to reject modernist ideas that are floating around on university campuses? This is another question he asked. He asked another question. Are Catholic college graduates today coming out of school prepared to defend their faith against so many false ideas presented by the spirit of this world? He goes on to ask another question. Why is it that so many Catholic professors don't like scholastic philosophy anymore? Have they become wedded to an exaggerated idea of themselves as modern men? End of quote. We'll address some of these in some of the sessions.
And I think you mentioned before that there was, at Vatican Council II, a big movement to go back to the scriptures and go back to the church fathers rather than just explain things from reason or scholastic philosophy.
That's a part of that ressourcement. back to the sources of people like Henri de Lubac and a whole other host of other, and of course John Paul II and Benedict XVI were part of that Nobel theology that we'll be getting into here pretty soon. One other point, belief, and this is what Pope Pius X called a poison atmosphere in modernist scripture scholarship, a poison atmosphere that Father McCarthy thinks is still alive and well. And he says there's little doubt that a poison mental atmosphere exists on many Catholic college campuses today. To what extent teachers and students have breathed in this poison is a matter of individual cases, but the absence of a strong Catholic apologetics or even of an interest in apologetics on many campuses is a worrying sign. I'm quoting him there. The presence of this modernist intellectual poison leads one to suspect that some Catholics are already modernist, while others are becoming modernist, or at least are allowing modernist ideas to influence their thinking.
Okay. For those who just turned in, and we're coming in the edge of the program, the end of the program, our resident scholar talking to us today is Ron Eldred, who's professor of American U.S. History and Apologetics at John Paul II Catholic High. Ron, we only have maybe 2 minutes. You want to try a few examples of modern Catholics?
Well, Father McCarthy gives one of a Catholic Religious Institute that put out a statement back a number of years ago, and I'll quickly go through these. The statement questions Catholic moral teachings that do not reflect human experience, that is, divorce, contraception, protection against AIDS, alleviation of suffering at the end of life, and all that kind of thing. This statement of this Catholic Institute also charges that the Church often gives priority to the reaffirmation of dogmas and traditional morals, rather than listening to people's search for meaning and journeying alongside them. A third statement, it calls for the teaching of the Church to change in its intransigent stance on sexual morals, its lack of openness regarding access to the sacraments for divorced and remarried Catholics, and its unwelcoming attitude toward homosexuals. In a fourth statement, the statement recommends that liturgical rites and symbols be more relevant to the world of today, end of quote. In other words, he's talking about a Catholic organization tainted by all this modernist thinking, making a statement like that, issuing a major Catholic organization. He doesn't identify this organization. But I would say that I can think of a lot of Catholic organizations, including some biblical scholar organizations, that would issue statements like that.
Well, especially when you say about divorce, contraception, protection against AIDS, as recently Pope Benedict came under fire for his statements in Africa, and the alleviation of suffering or assisted suicide. Those things are hot-button issues in our life today. And so we'll continue to weather program next time. So I want to say to our listening audience, may God bless you all, always and in all ways.